Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, this is Mark Striegel of Talking Metal. And once again, what we're going to do today is play out a recent edition of my other podcast, one of my other podcasts, called Metal Raps, here on the Talking Metal feed. I don't do this with every episode of Metal Raps, but you guys do seem to like it, so I'm going to, once again, put a Metal Raps episode, a recent Metal Raps episode, out over the Talking Metal feed. If you don't like it, don't listen. If you do like it, I suggest you go and subscribe to Metal Raps on iTunes. It would also be great if you could leave a review for Metal Raps on iTunes. And that's about it. We'll get right into the episode. I do want to remind you that we have a PayPal tab on talkingmetal.com. I know a lot of you guys like to make a donation in the during the holiday season, which it is right now. So please feel free. I would greatly appreciate a PayPal donation to Talking Metal. We've been without a sponsor now for a little while, so it would be excellent to have a little support from the listeners, if you can. I know not everyone is in the financial situation to do so, but if you can, we would love it. Thanks so much, and here is episode 8 of Metal Raps with myself, Mitch Joel, and Mitch LaFon.
Well, hey there, and welcome to episode number 8 of Metal Raps. My name is Mitch Joel, and I'm really excited to be back here this week with Talking Metal's Mark Striegel. Mark, how are you?
Good, Mitch. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. And as well as with One-on-One with Mitch LaFon, the one and only Mitch LaFon.
Good day, everybody. It's glad to be back. Always a pleasure.
So as usual, we kick the show off talking a little bit about who we've spoken to, what's been going on. Mark, Mitch, what you got? Let's start. Mark, anything? What's coming up on Talking Metal?
Yeah, actually, Mitch LaFon hooked me up with an interview with Jason Becker, who I know he spoke with a month or two ago. And yep. It was just a real pleasure to speak with the guy, and we got heavily and deep into a discussion about his time with David Lee Roth and some real interesting stuff about songs that he was playing with Roth, songs that he wrote with Roth that didn't end up on the record, and just great to talk with him. And hopefully, I'm hopeful that I uncovered a little more info that was unknown about his time with David Lee Roth. So stay tuned to Talking Metal for that interview.
This will be the greatest thing ever, Mark, if you scoop Mitch LaFon on Jason Becker info that he set up for you. I think there's some sort of vortex in the world that kills us all when that happens.
No. I mean, Mitch's interview was great, and he got so into the not only Jason's career, but just Jason's lifestyle and yeah, the relationship with his father. So I actually purposely didn't go that direction and just really stuck to the music that he produced back in the late 80s, early 90s.
If I can ask you, Mark, what was it like for you to interview him in terms of the pacing, in terms of the flow? Because, you know, when you speak to a Joe Perry or a George Lynch, you get into a flow and a rhythm. But with Jason, because of the way it's set up, you have to sort of stop. Was that difficult for you, challenging? Annoying.
Yeah, I think it was a little challenging, and I also the whole time was kind of thinking, well, this is going to be challenging to the listener. And I kind of decided halfway through doing the interview that I'm going to actually sit down and type this up, transcribe it all too, wow, because I think the stuff he's saying is important, and I know that there are going to be certain people who won't have the patience to listen to it, because when Jason talks, he talks through his father and things are spelled out, and at times it is a little disjointed and hard to follow.
Yeah, it's almost like a guessing game for his dad until he gets the right answer. And so, yeah.
Mitch sort of like blew the opportunity to talk about who he spoke to, because he like name dropped into your thing, which is clearly
they're on my mind. What can I tell you?
Exactly. So, Mitch, you had a great week. I mean, you got George Lynch. You had the one and only Steve Perry. Do tell.
No, not Joe Steve. Joe Perry.
Yeah, Steve Perry. Perry would be good too, but it would be a great week. But go ahead, Joe Perry.
Yeah, well, you know, I actually interviewed Steve Perry back in 2004, which was sort of him coming out of the shadows. But yeah, no, this week, George Lynch, you know, he's got that Sweet and Lynch project with Michael Sweet of Striper. And of course, Joe Perry, he's got a Christmas EP. And I got an email saying, hey, he's got an EP, want to talk to Joe? And it's like, well, yeah, of course I want to talk to Joe. Who doesn't want to talk to Joe? And what was great about it is I was given an incredibly hard 20 minutes, no more than 20. So what Joe did is he phoned 10 minutes ahead of time. And so when my 5:20 slot ended, I got to start at 4:50. So I got half an hour with Joe, and it was just an absolute thrill. We got to talk about the Done With Mirrors album. We got to talk about what kind of album he wants to make in the future with Aerosmith. And obviously the answer is another Rocks album. They really like that Rocks album. Just a great chat. I really hope people get to listen in. And on that episode, I have Matt Starr, who was Ace Frehley's drummer. Also, he's with Mr. Big now as a drummer. Co-host. So just a fun episode all around.
That's really good. It's funny too, like when I hear that Joe Perry's got a Christmas EP out and you're dealing with the PR people, I always get that sort of tinge in my heart. Back in the day when I was doing a substantial amount of interviews, they would always be like, you have 20 minutes with Joe Perry, but you can only talk about the Christmas EP. Right. You're like, what? So yeah.
Yeah, you know, they gave me they gave me no instructions about what we could talk about.
That's great. That's great.
Which is really, really great. You know, I also interviewed a guy named Kyle, who's the bassist for Hell Yeah, and that's going to come out a bit later. And of course, I asked a question about the drummer's brother, and right away, somebody got on the phone and said, no, you can't ask that. So, you know, which is fair. You know, I respect that. I moved along.
I might have a little Rick Allen shopping mall rant here, but I'll let it go.
So, Mitch Scholl, we wanted to ask you who you spoke with this week.
I had a lot of interesting calls. No, I mean, listen, it's a strange thing. I sort of went into metal raps as a sort of resurgence of my interest in music after a massive gap. And a while back, I played a little bit of electric bass, and I have a passion for that instrument. And I had this sort of strange connection through the sort of business thought leadership world that I do in terms of one of these people being partnered with this person who happens to run one of the largest online communities and online publications for bass players. And we'd been having conversations back and forth. And the truth be told, you know, we had the conversation about metal raps, and I thought, well, this would be an easier thing for me, you know, 15, 20 minutes here every once in a while. So we move forward with that. And then this thing sort of just started rolling a little bit. And I guess the catalyst for this is that there's going to be a Jaco Pastorius documentary coming out very soon. Jaco Pastorius is one of the most well-known bass players of all time. Influenced everybody you can imagine, mostly a jazz fusion guy, mind you. And one of the main people behind this movie and actually recovering Jaco's infamous bass, because Jaco's story is quite sordid and tailed towards the end, was Robert Trujillo from Metallica. And so they want to launch their podcast for this online publication with Robert Trujillo, and they asked me if I would be the host of the podcast. So it's like, talk about trial by fire. My first podcast interview in like God knows how many years with a music artist is Robert Trujillo from Metallica. And Mitch, unlike your little interaction with the PR people, this was quite the opposite, where the community of bass players is actually it's almost like a secret society, and they want to help each other out, and they want to be a part of the community very badly. And basically, it was one of those whatever you need. And I spent over an hour this week speaking to Robert Trujillo, and definitely not just about the movie. We spent, or Jacko's life, we spent a ton of time talking about Metallica. He was actually Skyping in from Metallica HQ. It was during the crazy storms that they were having out in San Francisco, and I think he was basically living out of there. Don't feel bad. I'm sure Metallica HQ is probably better than most 4-star hotels.
Right.
Probably.
And it was a really interesting conversation about creating new music after 5 years as Metallica. He spoke a lot, and I thought really candidly, about who runs the show there and what it means, and what it means to be a bass player, what his contributions are, how he feels about the scene. And I'm really excited to launch that podcast. And again, I'm being somewhat vague because it hasn't been announced on their platform yet.
Right.
But it's going to happen really, really soon. And the most amazing part of it is you talk about this community of people. He was basically saying, who can I introduce you to? And I can't go into the names of who he said he's going to introduce me to. And he's already started through email and texting. And it just sort of makes me feel like I never left the industry because of the sudden access. And of course, I'm realizing that this has primarily to do with the fact that, you know, I think bassists feel like they have to watch out for each other in the world. But having that sort of, you know, really unrestrained conversation. And we really talked a lot about creating music and creativity and being in this band. I'll tell you one little piece of interesting thing, because it's tied into the top. We wanted to talk a little bit about sort of what was the best stuff of 2014, is he talked a little bit about his disappointment in the Metallica By Request tour, and only that he was like, I'm just surprised that it wound up being a greatest hit show. Like, I thought that if we left it to the fans, we would get all these really obscure, crazy songs that the band wanted to play, that they had practiced, that they had learned. And he said it was an interesting thing to realize that the minute tickets go on sale for Metallica, it's almost like the diehard fans, the numbers don't even count compared to the mass audience that just wants to see the crazy hits and choose those hits. So that was interesting. And also him talking about the current writing process of where Metallica is at right now with all of this new music. We talked a lot about Lulu and Lou Reed. Talked a lot about that. Well, I'll tell you why. It's an interesting question. I think why is because
is he embarrassed?
When Lou Reed is alive,
right,
the story is very different than when Lou Reed is dead.
True.
And so listen, was he embarrassed? They were not embarrassed at all. And I think they were not embarrassed at all for all the right reasons. They are very, very creative as a unit, whether it's making movies in IMAX 3D, whether it's, you know, you could go down the list of things that they have done. They are willing to lose a lot of money and time in the creative process of seeing what happens. And while it may not have been everyone's taste, they enjoyed the creative process of them not being the leader, of letting him be the leader.
Right.
And it was a really deep conversation. And I thought, you know, I'm just getting the old sort of rust off the engine, as it were. And it was nice to sort of hear his notes and forwarding it to other people saying, I just had a great conversation. So it was interesting. And literally, guys, when I can say who it is and when it'll be published and will be soon, we'll leave a link for everybody to check it out. But an hour with Trujillo, and it was no holds barred. It was great.
Wow. That's awesome. I cannot wait to hear that. And I will go on record saying that I actually like Lulu. I'm a big fan of that album. Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of that. And there's a lot of people now who are really talking about some of the songs really resonating after several listens. Look, we live in a very fast-paced world, guys, right? And so we hear something once and it's like, it's terrible. We don't let stuff sink in. And I think sometimes after you let it sink in, you can appreciate certain areas and components of it. And some people are going to have the Mitch LaFon reaction, which is, dear Lord, what happened? Yeah. Let's shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about 2014, the year that was. Yep. Before we get into specific albums and tours, I thought I would ask you guys, what were some of the bigger themes that you thought were interesting in 2014 that you loved about the scene? I'll go first just to sort of give you guys some time to think, but I felt this whole residency concept.
Right.
This idea of bands that we love playing multiple nights in smaller venues with, you know, these sort of VIP packages, and sort of it's more of like this sort of really fan intimate thing, is a growing trend that I hope continues, and I hope it goes beyond Vegas. I hope it goes to cities, and I really love, and I don't know if it's social media or what it is, this sort of closening of bands to their fans and making these really intimate moments happen. So for me, one of the bigger themes of 2014 that I saw was a lot of that in very different ways. But to me, that was something that really touched my soul a little bit. I don't know. Mitch, do you want to go first?
Yeah, you know, I enjoy that. But you're right in the sense that if it just stays to Vegas, it's going to be this in my backyard and nobody else is going to see it. We're all going to have to travel. The other thing that's sort of similar are these cruises. And I get sort of a different reaction. I get a feeling that people are being excluded. If you don't have $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 to spend on a trip, you're not part of the party. And so, you know, I hope they can tour. The problem is a lot of the bands I like from the 80s, they can't fill a club with 60 people for a night, much less a residency in any
city. That's why, Mitch, you save up your money for all those shows you would have gone to and you do the one cruise. You're getting a vacation and all that together. You see, huh? Huh? Did I sell you on it? No? Okay.
Well, that and the fact I don't like boats. No, but, you know,
And just for Mitch, they're going to tour.
but I think if you're going to do a residency, you have to do something unique. You have to do something completely different. And you look at a band like Kiss, because we always talk about Kiss. I thought their residency where they played 9, 10, 11 nights and did the same set list was a failure. Because you shouldn't do that. You should really...
They could have done like one night is Dynasty, one night is Hotter Than Hell.
Yeah, but if you went to the show, which I saw two of those shows, I walked away thinking they probably couldn't have done that because the pyro, there was more pyro than I've ever seen at any Kiss show. Yeah. And it was in sync and timed out to every single song. And I mean, just like a Broadway show, like you can't really mix things up every night.
I've
because
heard
of
that
staging, I think that's maybe one of the reasons things were so locked in at that show.
Yeah, Mark, we're not doing a whole conversation on residencies. Mark, let's go. Let's hop to your theme of 2014 because I want to make time so we can hear some albums too. Mark.
Yeah. Well, I thought one interesting theme that a friend of mine just wrote an article about for the Wall Street Journal is that vinyl has gone up 49% in sales since 2013, 1 year ago. 49%. We're talking nearly 8 million vinyl LP records sold in 2014, which I think is interesting. I sat up last night listening to vinyl on my record player, and it is a different sound. I'm one of the guys that believes vinyl is superior to everything, which we don't have to have that argument tonight, but I just wanted to see what you guys of this trend that has been poo-pooed by people. Like back in 2012, somebody saying, oh, it's just a fad, vinyl will never last. But each year we're seeing it grow more and more, and again up 49% since 2013 this year.
Vinyl is the music fan's yoga, right? That's what this is. It's your ability to, because it's not portable. You got to carve out time, set up the room, have a moment, maybe a glass of wine now because we're older and have some money. It's one of those things. So I actually think it's that where we are looking as in a very fast-paced, pinging, friending, liking world, that sort of moment where we can go back a little bit in time and have the gatefold and have some art and just really relax, sitting focused on music. So I think it's a bigger trend than just vinyl. I think it ties into the sort of yoga trend. I really do think it's an important thing. But for me, I mean, just my lifestyle, you know, good on you, Mark, because we both have kids at similar ages. I'm like, just put it on my, if I can't even stream it from RDO or Spotify, I'm like, forget about it. But I don't disagree that the warmth you get from that needle is absolutely amazing. Mitch, what do you think?
The two Mitches are going to agree on this one. It sounds better. It's warmer. It's great because it means that people are engaged with music and they want music and they're, you know, buying music. That's all wonderful. I need to get places and I need to have music in my pocket. Period. I just don't have time to carve out.
Great.
Right. I just don't have time for that. I need convenience. I need it in my car. I need it on my headphones. I need it at work. I just can't do the whole vinyl thing. You know, and if I do have an hour to listen to an album, I don't want to have to get up after half an hour and turn it over. I just want to keep going. So, you know, but anything that encourages the purchase of music, the promulgation of the scene, great, go for it. So, yeah, you know, it's great. It's not for me, but it's great.
All right, guys, so let's talk about some of the albums that influence us the most in 2014. Now, I'm going to caution Mitch. I'm sure you've got a list that's longer than my arm, so keep it tight and reasonable.
Well, you know, actually, I plan on putting my list up on my Facebook and all that wonderful stuff. I've got 14 for 14, but I'm going to stick to like three or four. Just
I was going to say, give us two.
Okay.
Let's do two. Give us the top two, buddy.
You know, the two that I really enjoyed this year were Gothard, the album Bang, and then I also quite enjoyed Electric Boys' Starflight United.
Okay. Mark, I don't know about you. Those were two I did not expect to see coming at all. I've got no comment on because I've heard neither.
I enjoyed both.
I will mention California Breed, which I thought was just incredible, as probably my number one record of 2014. Bruce Bouillet's The Order of Control, which I mentioned last week. I will also quickly mention Red Dragon Cartel, the self-titled record, which some people didn't like. I loved it. I think every song is just incredible, and it's so great to have Jakey Lee back in the public eye.
All right, my picks. I got a list here. I'm gonna go with. I love the new Mr. Big album. I thought it was a great album. The stories we could tell, great album. Now I'm not sure if it was this year or not. So you guys might have to jump on me and have to choose another one. But was the Ronnie James Dio tribute "This Is Your Life" this year?
Yes, it was.
I believe it was.
I think it was in April.
I'm one of those guys that when Dio came out, I definitely loved, but I loved the other stuff more. Like, I wasn't into the whole Dungeons and Dragons leathery sort of there's a fire in your heart type of stuff. As I got more sophisticated and my palate maybe got a lot better for metal, clearly I started understanding the godliness that is Ronnie James Dio. And to hear all of those guys come together for this guy, I thought it was a stellar album. I'll give a little star asterisk bump to Winger. I've always been a Winger fan, and people bashed me back in the day for it, so bash me again for now. But I thought Better Days Coming was just a great rock album. So those would be my three. Let's talk some losers. I want to know what really disappointed this year. Let's go back to Mark. Mark, who disappointed you this year?
Off the top of my head, three big disappointments for me were the new 6 a.m. record. I thought it was going to be, you know, their greatest thing yet. Nikki Sixx, an awesome songwriter. DJ Ashba, awesome songwriter. I just didn't like it. I didn't think the songs were that great, and it felt like boring, watered down corporate FM wannabe rock. I think the Priest record was a disappointment to me. Mm-hmm. The production I thought was just awful, and I, for one, didn't think the songwriting was that great. A lot of people have – I've mentioned this on Facebook, and a lot of people have ripped me apart saying the songs were actually great, and it was just the production that lacked. But those two, off the top of my head, I could give you more if you want them. But
no, let's go over to Mitch. We'll probably jam a little. So, Mitch, what do you got?
Well, you know, I went back into the catalogs for this one. The McCartney of the songs of Paul McCartney, sung by all the world's greatest artists – as it says on the album cover, I just thought it was boring. I just really thought it was boring. You have the guys from Def Leppard, from Kiss, from Alice Cooper, Billy Joel, and it just didn't move me. Even Sammy Hagar doing Birthday, which you thought would be this great party version of it, was just boring. So major disappointment there. And then, you know, I could pick some new albums, but the Kiss Love Gun Deluxe, wow, what a wasted opportunity. It's just, you know, you've got a 7-minute interview that was from Shome FM in Montreal, and they labeled it wrong as WGN. You've got, you know, Gene Simmons solo outtakes rather than just the whole thing was dull. It was uninspired. So those are the two that I really aimed at. You know, there's a few others, but I'm friends with a lot of the people in those bands.
You don't want to throw them under the bus.
I don't want to throw them under the bus. I'll tell you off the record.
I'll tell you who I was just – and listen, I don't even know if they had albums out this year, to be honest. This whole Queensryche thing to me, just a massive disappointment. Whatever albums came out, I tried to listen. Just the whole thing. I felt that it really sort of came a bit to a head this year. And this is a band that I love. Mm-hmm. Operation Mindcrime is one of the greatest albums of all time. I loved Empire. I loved Rage Forward. I mean, I just feel like, wow, there's such a missed opportunity now to be able to just deliver those songs in a positive way. And just there's something going on there where I'm like, yes, I just feel that independent, you know, Jeff on his own, the other guys with the guy from Fate's Warning. And I don't believe either camp can deliver a true.
No, you're right.
Follow up to what we had from that glorious, glorious band. So that would be mine for sure. Any other things from this year that sort of you guys really liked or loved that want to bring up? Mark, was there any other sort of things that happened this year that you thought was really interesting?
Well, the Ace Frehley record, which my friend John, who I do Talking Metal with, was involved with the record, and he got to co-write a song on the record. And that was kind of personally a big moment for me, just because I've been making music with John and doing podcasts with him forever. And it was just awesome to see him have a co-write on this record. So that was and I thought the record was great. Space Invader by Ace really
Return to form.
Yeah, Return to form. And say what you want. I just love hearing Ace behind the mic delivering songs with the simple lyrics like he always has. And I thought
that's a very diplomatic way of saying something else.
Yeah, my laugh probably states where I stand. I mean, I've been this sort of non-Ace guy, and I love Kiss probably since day one. Mitch?
In terms of albums or in terms of concerts?
Just anything that sort of stuck out to you this year that you really sort of loved or thought was really great.
Well, then two things. The Bryan Adams Reckless 30th Anniversary Deluxe Edition. Four discs. There's a Blu-ray version. There's all kinds of unreleased songs, unreleased concert. There's a booklet. There's every song explained. It is the model of how a deluxe edition should be done. And of course, he's going on tour right now doing this Reckless tour where he's playing the entire album, which I think is great. But for me, the event of the year or the marking moment in music was Heavy Montreal. They got Metallica. There was that watershed moment where it wasn't just a few crazy metal fans in Montreal standing in a park going, well, okay, who else is going to show up? It was 80,000 people. It was crazy. It was hot. It was Nirvana.
I can't believe that Mitch and I have the same one. I was going to say, Heavy Montreal, great, yeah. Metallica. Yeah. Bringing the Metallica By Request show to North American shores, one night only, Montreal. The way that they put it together, to me, firmly established the reality that Metallica will, without question, be the Led Zeppelin of my generation. I thought that was an incredible performance of energy, strength, and whether you love the band or hate the band, this band takes as many bruises as they take accolades. There was, without a doubt, watching those four guys destroy on stage. It was like watching a professional sports team, you know, take the cup. Absolutely astounding.
Yeah, I mean, I was only there for that second day, the day after Metallica played, but as an American coming up there to witness Slayer play in front of like 50,000 people, I just was blown away at how strong heavy metal seems to be in Montreal, Canada, maybe Canada in general. I mean, it just a lot stronger and a lot more of a scene and a family and a reality than it is down here in the States.
Yeah, can I just ask you quickly, Mark? You're outsider coming in. You saw how it was backstage. You saw how the media and the promoter and everybody was together. It really wasn't a business proposition. It was like you said, like a family, right? You got a different perspective.
Yeah, it had a community vibe to it, much like what Lollapalooza used to do down here in the States back in the 90s, where it wasn't just a concert. It was an overall community coming together to celebrate the things that they love. And that was what Heavy Montreal was to me. But unlike Lollapalooza, it was heavy metal. It was hard rock and heavy metal.
Now, not to counter what Mitch said earlier, but I would say that a lot of people say that that's exactly why these cruises are absolutely astounding. Price point forgiven. I hear you, Mitch, but that's what it is. It feels like it's a community. It feels like everyone's in it together. And I think in general, that's a great theme to end it on. This idea that we're seeing this more and more. In fact, I would even say that artists that typically wouldn't play together are now even playing together and doing things together and really sort of creating this bond that I know for sure we wouldn't have seen back when I was a teenager enjoying the music as well. Guys, I think that was a great roundup of the stuff that touched us and didn't touch us in 2014. This has been Metal Wraps number 8. We will be back really, really soon with Metal Wraps number 9, and we'll speak to you soon. Now, did you want me to go back and just fix that so you can say we're